Hello and welcome to the Metapod Podcast, the Pokemon podcast that revolves around the evolving meta as new archetypes come into fruition. So do new episodes of the Metapod Podcast. Sean, how are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm great, Jake. I sat through the finals match this morning from Gdansk, which we'll get into, which I'm almost certainly butchering the pronunciation of, but... And let me tell you, it was a riveting gameplay footage. I'm joking. But yeah,
it was
good.
Definitely interesting. I do know that the person, so spoiler alert, it was 2-0 was the final. We'll talk about the decks and stuff later. But I got to watch a little bit of it. I had a pretty busy Thanksgiving weekend with work. And so I did get to watch a little bit of the rebroadcast and stuff, but I know the final game two was a quick scoop
because there was just no way.
Yeah.
He scooped before he even played his turn.
Yeah.
His opponent had a battle VIP pass going first turn one. And it was just like, yeah, I'm not playing with this. I'm done. Let's call it a weekend.
Anyways, but I'm doing all right. Thank you so much for asking, Sean. We got a lot to talk about this week in terms of regionals and stuff, even though it was a pretty light news week, I would say. There's still several conversations to talk about, especially because I can already imagine what my episode title and thumbnail is, text for the Snorlax match. How to beat Snorlax 101. This is the episode for you. So stick around in this episode. We'll talk about that in a portion along with many others. But Sean, we've got some things to talk about first. What do we got going on lately?
Well, I think we can just jump straight into the one piece of news. We have one piece of news today, but it could be very exciting. And that is Pokemon is releasing what they're calling hyper rare cards. In my mind, Jake, it almost feels like rainbow rares were like the hyper rare for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got like these special illustration rares, which are amazing. Don't get me wrong. I love them, but you know, they're kind of their own category. So the question now is, okay, well, do you need to replace rainbow rares? What might that look like? And we have some indication that this new hyper rare type of foiling effect, we're going to see it in Paldean Fates. Jake, what could this foiling effect look like? What are the rumors?
So Pokemon quoted this exact line in terms of the new 6 hyper rare cards with a new and unique raised foil effect that is going to be coming in Paldean Fates. We talked about Paldean Fates in previous episodes. It's the upcoming holiday set, yada yada yada. It's coming out in Japan on, I think this, December 1st. Yes, right, December 1st. And it's coming a week before another set in a different card game, One Piece. One Piece's next upcoming set, OPO5, for anyone who is aware of that, as I shuffle, you know, a small stack of One Piece cards as I'm talking about this podcast. Awakening of a New Era. And in Awakening of a New Era, this is why we want to talk about this, there are some upcoming cards in that set that have been announced in Japan. We've seen it and stuff like that, that have a raised foil effect. So as people who have been around card games for a long time, maybe collecting card games, a lot of times printing companies and production techniques will transfer from one card game to another. One Piece is done by Bandai, I believe, yep. Right, Sean?
Yep, that's correct.
Yeah, Bandai, just like Digimon and stuff. And so with Bandai now starting this kind of raised effect, the speculation is that this new and unique raised foil effect is probably going to be the same thing. Now, I've seen these cards, these One Piece cards, and if you go to PokeBeach.com on their website, you can see the cards for yourself, and I've seen them on like camera and stuff, like videos. These look really, really sweet. So I'm really hoping that the raised foil effect is going to look like this, but please, please, Please. I think we'll see probably through Shiny Treasure EX when that releases in Japan what that effect is going to look like. And who knows? Because there are sometimes as well that cards don't really make it to the States in terms of, or the rest of the world outside of Japan in terms of different effects and things like that. You know, we've seen individual cards such as supporters and stuff. We have seen other cards like the gold cards. You remember the gold tag team cards? That took a long time. That took a long, long time to come to the States. So who knows?
I will say that it was announced that Paldean Fates would have that effect specifically. So not Shiny Treasures, which is the Japanese set. So,
well, yeah, I guess we don't know if it's going to come in there.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that they would have the same foil effect, because if you don't, then you're like, oh, then the Western world gets like a special version of a card that Japan never gets, which happens very rarely.
I mean, every reverse holo, actually.
I mean, yeah, technically. But although, reverse holo,
because Japan doesn't have the ugly ugly reverse hollows that we get.
One thing I will say, though, and this is just some of these Bandai raised foil effects, there's also, I don't know if it's going to be similar, there is a Chinese version of Naruto cards. I don't know if you've ever heard of these, Jake, but like Naruto Kaiu cards, I have a bunch that I've opened. There are cards in that have the same raised foil effect that I have personally seen. So it may be similar, it may be different. Who knows what the printing process is like, but they have like 3D effect holographic cards in that. It's really weird. So there's a lot of experimental cards that they have in that, and I think there's something similar. The one thing I will say with at least the Bandai situation is, for people who played the original Digimon card game, there was a slightly raised foil effect in the very first sets that was on the rare only cards. There was like a, I don't know if you remember, Jake, there was like these, this gold embossed border, and it was raised.
I think I do remember that.
The problem with that border. Well, not the very first set, the new Digimon series.
Oh, you're talking about the brand. Okay. Yeah. Then I definitely remember that. Yeah.
So they had that, and then they switched away. They went completely away from that style of rare printing. And the reason, at least my theory, is that type of embossed printing, you could actually see through even in a sleeved card on the back. So on the back of the card, because it was imprinted, if you were to like press and shuffle the cards, you would actually see a square outline slightly on the very back of the cards, which would make every single one of those cards technically marked, even if you did nothing.
So, I was going to say, because if you look at like a regular card, right, like a regular foil card, I mean, it's flat, right?
Yeah,
so exactly. There's already like potential issues with marked cards, because there is just like theoretically with a raised holo foil, there is just more card in the sleeve necessarily. So it's like a bigger sleeve gap. I don't know how to explain that accurately, if that makes sense. If you've got a sleeved card in front of you, you may understand what I'm talking about. But there's already that. And then what you're talking about, like the imprint, basically, that comes on the back. I don't know. Yeah, it would be tough. See. Yeah.
I mean, that's the only thing that, like, I would assume that the Pokemon Company is not going to make that mistake, that whatever printing process they're using is, it won't be like embossed into it where it like it has an outline on the back of the card that can be seen even in a sleeve. I'm going to assume that they thought of that, because I don't run a printing company and I don't run a TCG, so
I was gonna say, because like if hypothetically it is like the One Piece set that's coming to the rest of the world outside of Japan, if it's similar to that effect, and it is that effect and that printing production technique, etc., whatever you want to call it. I follow a lot of like Japanese One Piece players on Twitter, like specifically players. And I have not heard a single rumbling about anything like that in terms of, like, you know, marked cards, things like that. But also, it's pretty common, I feel like, a lot of times the double sleeve have like the
outer.
Gigantic outer sleeve with your, like, really cool patterned, you know, sleeves that you have to protect them. So I don't know if that makes a difference as well. Like, if they do have the back that imprints, you know, the back of your sleeve when you're shuffling and stuff, I don't know if, like, a solution to that would be double sleeving. But also, Pokemon, I think, has different rules than a lot of other card games with their sleeving.
Who knows? But I will say, in Digimon, I don't know how all my other Digimon peeps felt about it, but in the early days, when you could tell what was a rare, now that doesn't mean that the rare was the best card, but between that and then the early set curling, people didn't talk about it, because I think that, like, they didn't want to be seen as cheating, but, like, you could tell whether or not you should let somebody go through a security check, because I'm just going to say this. There were games when I made decisions to let somebody security check, knowing that that card was probably going to have a high HP and then my opponent's Pokemon Digimon would die. I just had the knowledge, and I couldn't help having that knowledge because the cards were made that way. It was a feels bad, but anyways, that's not me trying. I'm not trying to cheat for anybody out there.
John is outing himself as an official cheater. Somebody call Bandai.
It was one of those things where it's like, it's just there, and it's, I can't not see it. So
I mean, it's like when your opponent is shuffling the cards in their hand, and you just happen to see them, like, flash the cards as they're shuffling. Like, technically, I guess, yes, that is cheating, but it's like in your peripherals, right? Like, you can clearly tell that that is a full art Iono. Or something like that.
Yeah, and you're like, I guess I won't do this thing now.
Yeah, and it's just like, it's one of those unfortunate things. Like, you're not trying to cheat. You just so happen to cheat because of carelessness of another player, you know? Or it's like when somebody, like, here's another example. Like, when somebody goes to attach energy or maybe play Nestball, but they hold on to the card, but they put it, like, flat on the table, right, but they're still, like, holding on to it, and then they pick it up and put it back in their hand to not actually play it because they didn't let go. Like, that's another instance like that. So,
well,
I don't know.
I mean, that may also be gamesmanship, because you could also be like, hey, I want this player to know that I have this thing in my hand for whatever reason.
Well, yeah, you're calling a bluff or whatever. Right. But anyways, we've seen cards in the past. We've talked about them, A-Specs. You know, they're so old, like, in expanded tournaments, they warp, and you can get called for marked cards and things like that. I have seen, though, a lot more often, I feel like, within this last year than prior to COVID, we have seen a lot more of judge proxies for cards. So,
true.
Like, they just take a card out and write on it. Like I saw over the weekend in one of the regionals, somebody posted their list and they had a judge proxy for Pidgeot EX, you know, a relatively new card. But just warped enough or something of the sort to be noted that, like, okay, this isn't on you, but we got to switch out this card. So maybe, who knows, in the future, that with these foil effects, you know, if they do have that kind of thing, you just change the sleeve and get a judge proxy, or maybe they don't have that at all.
It might be fine. Who knows? This is my paranoia. That's all. That's the only thing.
Yeah, we may just be, what's the phrase where you create unnecessary panic among people? Like, what's that called? Mass hysteria or whatever?
I don't know if we're creating mass hysteria, but we're definitely, I'm paranoid. That's it.
Our small niche audience that we love and adore dearly, that listens to us week by week, we're creating chaos. But anyways, Sean, there has been some chaos that's been created on Twitter lately, calling the ban of a specific archetype once again. And let me tell you, if you think that Snorlax should be banned in standard format, you very obviously didn't live through the Oranguru era, and it shows. But
that's so true.
It's so unnecessary. It was flowing through Twitter, and I'm like, this is such a bait tweet. Like, anybody who fell for that and really gave it interaction, you shouldn't give it the light of day. And I'm calling everybody out. If you fell for that, you silly. But listen to this podcast, because we're going to tell you why you're silly and how you can beat the deck that you despise. But Sean, let's talk about the results first. Which tournament do you want to go through?
Let's go Gdansk, because that's what I have pulled up on the screen right now. And I will say, we will get some of these names horribly wrong, especially the winner, yeah, I think, is Lukasz, maybe. But Gdansk, which happened, I believe this is Poland. And we have the top eight here. I think Jake and I are primarily just going to talk about, we can give you a quick overview, but we're going to deep dive into three decks that we thought were particularly interesting. But brief overview here before we dive in. I think for me, some surprises were the top eight just looks pretty different, I would say, from what we just saw at LAIC. There's three Charizards in the top eight. Mm-hmm. Which is not to say that Charizard was thought to be a bad deck, but that's a really good showing for a Charizard. And two Mew VMAXs. So just the deck is just good. Deck good. It just needs a little bit of luck in a tournament run, and it can easily make top eight or better.
You want to ban a card, ban Genesect. I mean, yeah, that's honestly, what you really should. I'm just kidding. No, it's fine.
I mean, yeah, it's fine. Look, it'll be gone soon enough. But so that's like, look, five of the top eight is Charizard and Mew VMAX. But the other three are some truly unique flowers. Jake, what one do you want to start with? Do you want to start with the winner or start with something weirder?
Let's just start with something weirder. Let's go kind of bottom up from the decks that we want to talk about. So let's talk about Tord Rekla first. So after some controversy at LAIC about pace of play and things like that, Tord Rekla decided to go to this regional saying, okay, I'm going to play the fastest deck that I possibly can and excel with it to prove you all wrong. And boy, howdy, did he bring something crazy. He brought Lost Box Kyogre, right, which is a deck that we've seen before. But there are, I would probably say, four cards that really shocked a lot of people playing. Sean, all of those cards are worth two prizes. What are they?
Oh, my God. This is, so we have Roaring Moon EX, which I've been a stan of in Lost Box for a while. And it did well the other weekend. So, boom, that one, you're like, all right, I've seen this before. Why is this weird?
Yeah, like, kind of surprising with Kyogre, but, like, okay, sure. We've seen that guy. Yeah.
And then you think to yourself, well, okay, you have Kyogre, you have Roaring Moon, you have your Sableye and your Cram and Greninja. What other attackers do you need? Well, somehow, Tord has found space for Iron Hands EX. Okay, I mean, I get it, you know, in certain matchups, if you're taking two prizes instead of one, if you're in the Lost Box mirror, maybe, boy, howdy, that would feel bad for the Lost Box player you're playing against. So you got the Iron Hands. And then probably the weirdest set of cards here is a 1-1 line. Biggest surprise. A 1-1 line of Origin Form Palkia V and V-Star. Like, I guess you can have a really, if you need it, you can have a really big body. 280 HP is not nothing. And then the other benefit here is you have access to Star Portal as your V-Star power. This deck does not even bother with the Forest Sealstone. Let's ignore that. Instead, let's accelerate three water energy onto any one of our Pokemon or number of them. You could do that onto your Iron Hands. You could do that onto Kyogre late game. You could do it onto Greninja. Doesn't matter.
You could do it onto Roaring Moon if you really wanted to, because Roaring Moon has that one colorless energy requirement.
That's true. So, like, this is definitely a weird deck. I would say otherwise, it's pretty normal. It's just, well, I say pretty normal. It only plays one supporter. It's got one supporter, four copies. It's got four Colorless Experiment and three Pokegear. So this This reminds me a lot of Firebox back in the day when you would play four welders, four pokey gear, and your well it was welder or bust.
Yes.
So it's very much like that deck. Yeah, I don't know, Jake, what do you I've sort of spoiled all the surprises, but what do you think about seeing this deck as a whole?
I think it's really interesting because, and one of the things that we didn't mention just now about Origin Form Palkia V-Star and how it is a very, very, it fits well in this deck, not only for its energy acceleration on all of these Pokemon that you can do, but if you think about the format right now, Entei is very dominant, right? Or at least has done well as of late.
Yeah.
Raikou has been very good in Maraidon decks. So we're seeing these sort of amount of bench Pokemon equals more damage type attackers do well in the format. And Palkia V-Star does that same exact thing, right? So there's another option as well with Palkia V-Star in attacking for those big bodies, like you were talking about. It's a big body, it's a big wall. If opponent has to do multiple attacks, you could probably take multiple prizes off of subspace swell attacks if you so wanted to. Now, it's probably better in a lot of situations to use Sableye, Cramorant, Kyogre, Roaring Moon, or Iron Hands. But again, it's another flexible option to be able to set up some good math, put up some good numbers, things like that. And just overall, like a really, really fun, cool deck. This was probably, I would say, the unexpected deck to break out. I think that this is a concoction that Tord and like his crew of people made before the event after LAIC, not necessarily something that a lot of people had on their radars. And the results showed for that deck. No Manaphy, no Jirachi in here. So you come up in the lost box mirror, well, you just Iron Hands a lot, I guess.
Yeah.
It's really cool to see this deck go because Mirage Gate again and the Lost Zone engine, we've seen so many pairs with the Lost Zone engine. Just a really, really good engine to be able to power up a variety of Pokemon and attackers. And I really thought this list was cool. Again, like you said, reminiscent to the Welder days,
Yeah,
to
it's
squeeze in those Poke Gears. Unfortunately, not a fourth Poke Gear, but honestly, I don't know what you would take out for the fourth Poke Gear. Maybe the Pal Pad, I guess, but
I
it's just
mean,
a
I
really
guess
cool list.
if you have Palpad though, right? Like say you play two Colorless, you Palpad the two back in. Now you have
It's
four
like,
Colorless and a deck that's half the size of your original deck. You don't need the three Poke Gear.
it's like one Pal Pad makes you now have six Colorless in a game. Which
Right.
is very strong. So probably correct to have a Pal Pad instead of a fourth Pokégear. But yeah, just this deck is really, really cool. I do think it's pretty punishing though. You do need to know the ins and outs of the deck, the ins and outs of the matchups, how to approach certain situations. Because I think most other Lost Zone decks, it's pretty punishing when you're wrong.
Yep,
It's not
I
the
fully
easiest to
agree.
pilot. But really, really cool to see the binder drop of Lost Box.
Yeah, I think a deck nobody was expecting that kind of deck. And the next one here is a deck I also think nobody was really expecting, which is from our third place, Luke Kirkham. And he rocked up with Origin Form Palkia V-Star yet again and Calyrex with a smattering of other attackers. Jake, I did the breakdown the last deck. Can you break down what's going on here?
So this, I feel like, is very similar to what we've seen with Palkia V-Star decks in the recent past, right? Your main Pokemon, or I guess the bulk Pokemon that you have, or well, bulk as in like a majority of the Pokemon that you have, is a 3-3 line of Palkia V and V-Star and a slew of other attackers. We have the Chin Pao in there. We saw from, I think it was Cyrus at NA, was it NAIC?
It might have been.
When did Cyrus play the Palkia V-Star deck? Do you remember that?
We I
covered it
honestly
on the
can't remember.
channel.
We did. I can't remember it though, but
I can't remember exactly, but they played the Palkia V-Star deck with a Chin Pao. The Chin Pao, great Pokemon to grab energies out of your deck to utilize off of Earth and Vessel. Ultra Ball, just putting Pokemon into then Melanie and stuff like that, but also some other attackers. Obviously, you have Gradiant Greninja. You've got Ice Rider Calyrex VMAX. Again, like we talked about with Palkia V-Star in the last deck, this is a huge body that can deal a lot of damage. 200 and is it 50 damage? 250 damage for two energy is a really, really good number, especially when we talk about cards like Radiant Charizard, right? Radiant Charizard hits for 250. It was very popular the other weekend in Sablezard lists, and a very, very good option as well in Charizard, which we're not really going to talk about a lot of Charizard lists because it's like Charizard and Pidgeot. We've seen it before, but Charizard was a really, really good play this past weekend, and I think Radiant Charizard did a lot to boost that. So Ice Rider Calyrex VMAX with like no attacking metal types in the format, you're not going to get one hit KO'd unless you like your opponent's Maridon just absolutely hits the nuts or it's late game against Charizard EX. But so most often than not, you're not going to get one hit KO'd. But another attacker, again, we talked about the Entei, we talked about the Raikou. Suicune got its spotlight in this deck as well with the same damage output. Fleet-footed, I think it was just another really, really good option for this deck. You have so many different, three different two energy type attackers, or I'm sorry, two energy cost attackers, or I'm sorry, four energy cost attackers. You have Suicune, Chin Pao, Calyrex, and Palkia V-Star. Some of them can be done with Melanie. The Chin Pao can't be done with Melanie, but I don't think you do too much with Chin Pao unless your opponent's never taking knockouts and doing a lot of spread damage, then go in with Chin Pao and attack. But I think it's mainly for its ability. You've got other options in here, some tech cards like Spirit Tomb, right? Canceling Cologne for your Radiant Greninja because you are playing the cross switcher package. So the Radiant Greninja canceling Cologne makes sense, especially with Star Portal. Great combination of cards. And you've also got some other options like Mew EX in there. Mew EX just good for drawing cards and then also just copying a specific attack to be able to take big knockouts or, you know, different types of knockouts. Really, really cool in this format. Really, really cool list. This was definitely the other surprise of the weekend, I would say. Arguably more surprising than Tord's List. Because Tord's List is a conglomeration of like good cards that we've seen a lot lately, whereas this is like, oh, a Palkia V-Star deck. What? So it's very interesting. Two really cool decks.
Definitely interesting. And I also thought that the Spiritomb here, I was thinking about like, oh, what is the Spiritomb really good against? Like why would you have a
You
whole space? Yeah, Mew. I think you're
Lumineon.
absolutely right? You can stop some Lumineons, but like I really think that it's the Mew that like all those Genesects drawing all those cards, like because Mew is one of the few decks I think that it can reach the numbers to kill maybe a Calyrex to kill your Palkia. But if they can't draw very many cards, then doesn't really matter, right? If they can't find those pieces, then they're gonna be two-shotting you, and that's big sad for them.
I think
So
another thing with the Spiritomb going back to the Lumineon is, you know, we saw again the rise in Charizard, right? Charizard plays Arvin. Charizards have Lumineons in them to be able to get the
that's
Arvins
true.
because then Arvin is to get like four Sealstone and another item card. And so if you can just deny early game on Spiritomb against these decks that very frequently play Lumineon, you know, Lugia definitely on the decline, but it could be a counter for that turn one Burnett as well. It can just do a lot of damage against your opponent's Pokemon to be able to just really race ahead of them, I guess you could say, in the early game.
The last deck that I don't think it was a it's not really a surprise, but Jake and I have not we haven't really talked about this deck, I don't think, too much in depth, have we?
I think we've
Maybe a
talked
little bit.
about it a little bit, but it definitely, this archetype in general, Snorlax Stall, really has just surged ahead as of late.
Yeah, so this deck here, piloted by Lukasz, and he won the regional with the deck, as we were alluding to at the beginning of the pod. The finals match was against Charizard. I don't think Charizard has a particularly good time against this
No, which I think
deck.
is why Snorlax was a really good play for this event, and how we're going to see in the other event too, so many Snorlaxes did really, really well is because it was a Charizard heavy meta.
Yep. So for those of you who don't know, Snorlax, the reason that it's basically a control stall deck is the Snorlax is the key. It is 150 HP basic Pokemon that has the ability block. As long as this Pokemon is in the active spot, your opponent's active Pokemon can't retreat. Now, you might think to yourself, that seems mid. I'm sure Jake and I, when we did our set review, I'm sure we even mentioned like, oh, Sander might like this, but who knows if it's got all the pieces. But the reason that this really works is because you can trap your opponent's actives with things like Counter Catcher, with things like Echoing Horn and Boss's Order, and with this supporter card, Erica's Invitation, which says your opponent reveals their hand, you put a basic Pokemon you find there onto your opponent's bench, you put that Pokemon then into the active spot. So even if you want to play a game where it's like, well, then fine, I will just whatever I start with, I won't put anything else down. I'll attach energy, I'll attack, and then I win, right? Well, that would be a lovely sentiment if if cards like Erica's Invitation and Echoing Horn didn't exist. So there's a lot of other cards here. Jake, I can, pass it over to you, but in a nutshell, that's the way that this deck typically wins, is trapping your Pokemon that don't have the ability to attack. Typically useless Pokemon in the active, and just doing that over and over until you run out of switching cards, and then you just deck out. So, Jake, any other, aspects of this deck that you want to talk about that you think are important for the listeners to know?
I think it's really interesting as well how Temple of Sinnoh is in this list because if we think about a lot of the top decks right now, like Charizard, we think of just Lost Zone decks in general, Maridon. There's a really heavy emphasis, I feel like, on stuff like Mew. Playing three Temple of Sinnohs instead of maybe like a Path to the Peak or anything like that, because I think abilities are more prevalent than special energies. But maybe it's the fact that special energies, if they can get away with the special energies, it is so much more dominant in the game, because you also talk about different tech cards that you have in here, like Giacomo, which is discard a special energy from each of your opponent's Pokemon. So again, with the Mew matchup, you've got the Spiritomb in there. Just a lot of stuff like that. And Sydney as well. Sydney, another one, up to two of any combination of tool card, special energy, and stadiums from it. So you could discard another tool, special energies as well. So just really, really interesting in that aspect of how it goes. And with the Snorlax, you already talked about 150 is big. The bravery charm as well, just boosting that HP just really made it a tough target to take down and constantly recycle with Penny. No two rows though in this list.
I will say one thing that's important to note about Temple of Sinnoh is it turns off Jet Energy,
Oh yeah,
which is a
is that
switching out.
true? Yeah.
So that
I
I think
feel like
that's the
I
other reason. Yeah.
just probably for like your Lost Box matchup, because usually they
Yeah.
jet energy and then manually retreat or
Well,
something,
and
even though Snorlax blocks the retreat.
also think about if you're up against Lugia, right? Lugia might play two, three Jet Energies in a deck, maybe more if they're playing the Snorlax build. And so for them, it's just kind of like, yeah, you might just hold, like, just draw your cards, never really use the Archeops, and just Jet Energy when you need it. And that's basically four extra switching outs for that deck. So I think that's part of what Temple of Sinnoh is for.
Interesting. But this was a really, really cool list. As most other control decks, you have to know what you're doing. It's not as easy. Definitely not in the same spot as Pidgeotto or Oranguru control once was, when a Joe Schmo like me could do it and get top eight in a cup. you know, just out of the blue. So it's really, really cool. There's a lot of different interesting takes in here. I think Erica's Invitation is one of the cooler cards in this. I love the idea of like the captivating Pokepuff, like we talked about in previous episodes, how it has that kind of same effect and can really swing games. And especially with the introduction of Countercatcher, like Countercatcher is such a good inclusion for this deck.
Yeah. And I will say, if you want to know what the loop is, right? Because you think to yourself, okay, well, I'll deck my opponent out. The question is, how do you prevent yourself from decking out in the process? There's a few cards here that are a big part of the loop. One that I'll mention briefly is Pidgeot V. So Pidgeot V has an ability, which is once during your turn, if this Pokemon is on your bench, you can shuffle it back into your deck. So basically, late in the game, if you're in a weird spot, you can throw Pidgeot down, put it right back into your deck. Also useful for your Forest Seal Stone if you need it, but, you know, that's one way to do it, which is probably why they don't run Path to the Peak, because if that path gets stuck and Pidgeot's their only out, then they're, you know, they can't do anything.
No, it makes sense.
And then the other combo, if you're looking to play this deck, the combo you really got to get down is Silene, Team Yell's Cheer, and Palpad. So Palpad lets you put two supporters from your discard pile back into your deck. Team Yell's Cheer allows you to shuffle three in any combination of Pokemon and supporter cards, except for Team Yell's Cheer, into your deck. So you get three of your supporters back. And those supporters may be also Silene, which lets you flip two coins. And for each heads, you put a card from your discard pile on top of your deck. So the loop there is you Silene for at least Palpad, you Team Yell's Cheer for Silene, and then you Palpad for Team Yell's Cheer. And you just, odds are you'll hit enough heads with Silene to sort of keep that loop going. You got two Palpads in case you whiff once. But yeah, that's sort of your loop there once you get your opponent locked.
There's other opportunities, especially once you get your opponent locked. Another supporter that is often cycled through again and again, Misfortune Sisters, right? That is the kind of one of the mill cards of choice to get rid of switch cards in there. Very, very important for getting rid of switch cards. Look at the top five cards of your opponent's deck and discard any number of item cards you find there. Shuffle all the other cards back into the deck. So that and Crabominable is a really nice way to just continuously discard cards and discard more cards and discard more cards. To get your opponent to deck out as you're doing the loop as well, because Team Yell's Cheer allows you to get three different supporter cards. So really, really cool in my opinion. I love seeing different iterations of control, especially executed very, very well. I don't know if I'll be able to do it, but really, really cool to just see control back in the spotlight, because it feels like it's been hammered down and hammered down time and time again by TPCI and stuff.
I will say, just for all the people out there listening, I can totally understand why if you get sat against a control deck, it can feel really frustrating. Like that's kind of the point of control, is so that you don't get to do what you normally do, which is attack and play the game. And I will say that this specific deck, at least compared to Pidgey Control, like Pidgey Control back in the day and some of the other control decks, they didn't stop you from doing your thing in the same way. Like Snorlax just says you can't retreat, which feels like at this one point, not a very strong ability, but then in practice feels like so strong, you're like, why does this exist? Whereas like Pidgey Control was primarily based off of playing Crushing Hammer and then flipping coins until your opponent ran out of energy and then you just win, right? Like that was, and so that one, it was like you felt like the control deck had to get lucky, even though that's not how it actually worked.
Because like Oranguru is just so strong.
Exactly. But like at least that one, you felt like you always had a little bit of a chance. Whereas, you know, I get it. Like if you have even a one energy retreat, like a Manaphy stuck in the active, if you're out of switching cards, the game is just over. You're just kind of like, what can I do? So I can totally understand that. Like that is particularly frustrating, I would say. But
I will say, though, I've seen a lot of people talk about how they're very much enjoying this meta going on right now. And I don't know if that's before Control becomes way more populous or what, but there's a lot of notable people, a lot of longtime players that have been saying they've really been enjoying the format. And I think the added variety and the added thinking of stall may not be a full reason why people feel that way, but I do think it adds to it, because I do feel like it's a win condition and an archetype that should exist.
Fully agree.
Jake, no bias.
I don't want to get into the deck list, but I do want to touch on Brisbane, which was a regional that happened in Australia at the same weekend. Just really quick, I think highlighting that two Snorlax stall decks came in the top eight at sixth and seventh place. I actually don't know if Gardevoir is a bad matchup for the deck, because in Gardevoir, at least, it feels like almost every Pokemon can attack.
Yeah, and you can always, especially if they're not playing Path to the Peak or anything, you can always accelerate your basic energy to it.
Right, like even if you can't retreat it, well, fine, it's just your attacker now. And if they're never going to put any damage on you, you're just kind of like, all right, this is fine. So if their only option is trapping Gardevoir EX in the active, then I think what Gardevoir can do is just never put down an EX and just use Shining Arcana and like manual attachment on their Pokemon. And then that's I think, actually the way that you get through that matchup. So I will mention that it was sixth and seventh, but there were three Gardevoirs in the top eight, with Gardevoir winning that tournament, two Charizards and one Fusion Strike Mew. So
I will say, in terms of the Gardevoirs, Australia, I feel like, has been like the Gardevoir area. Like, I feel like a lot of Australian players really, really like Gardevoir. And it usually does well at Brisbane, although I do remember, I think it was Brisbane last year where it was all Palkia. Do you remember that? Top eight was like all Palkia.
Something like that, yeah.
But anyways, the first placed Gardevoir list played Battle VIP Pass. The other two did not. I think that's something interesting. We're not going to talk about the full list.
That's the big debate in the community. Is Battle VIP or no?
Yeah, and we talked about how, like, you know, Luke Morza won that late night without the Battle VIP Pass. And then we saw in LAIC, people weren't really playing Battle VIP Pass. But then Harry Shallcross, the New Zealand player, winning with Battle VIP Pass in Gardevoir. So it's like, it's a very interesting thing of, like, the flexibility of the deck and, like, maybe because Snorlax is so good, right? Maybe you do want to play Battle VIP Pass to set your board up a lot more faster, to be able to start swinging a lot more faster. And maybe Mirage Step is not the card to do in there, although winning list did have a Mirage Step. So,
I mean, it's like, you can't put my Manaphy onto the bench if my bench is full.
Yeah, exactly. You can't Erica's Invitation put Pokemon down if it's full. And if all six Pokemon can attack, then woo, howdy.
Yeah, it's not gonna be great for you. And also, teleportation, Ralts, is a thing.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's the one that switches your active, right? Switches Pokemon with one of your bench Pokemon. Yeah, so maybe, I don't know, maybe Battle VIP Pass version is really, really good in a more populous Snorlax meta.
Yeah. But Jake, speaking of the potential for Snorlax to start creeping into more cups, more challenges, eight, maybe even degenerates at locals just rocking up with Snorlax stall. Jake, what are some tech cards that people can throw into their deck that won't take more than one space in their deck to combat this growing threat?
One of them is my favorite card from Paradox Rift in terms of the art. It's the little Minior. I love the little Minior, that little guy there. You can get The special illustration rare for only $7. It is a steal of a deal. It is one of the best illustration rares in the set. So pick them up now before they start going up. But Minior, for anyone who does not know, is a fighting type basic Pokemon. So when you have this Pokemon on your bench, it has an ability. Once during your turn, if this Pokemon is on your bench, when you attach an energy card from your hand to this Pokemon, you may switch it with your active Pokemon. So bringing it up to the active, force whatever is trapped in there from the Snorlax on the counter catcher or whatever to move up into the active. And it has a colorless energy attack. So as soon as you attach that energy card and proc the ability, you can start attacking fighting damage, which is weakness on Snorlax. 20 more damage for each retreat cost in your opponent's active Pokemon. And with Snorlax, the block Snorlax having a 4 retreat cost, you are doing 160 damage to that big beefy boy. 160 damage to that Pokemon. Now, if they have Bravery Charm, well, I don't know. I just play.
Fine, you gotta
like,
wait another turn.
Yeah, you either wait another turn, and if they gust something else up, just attach another energy and shoot that guy right back up there. Or what you can do is you can like Lost Vacuum, right? Lost Vacuum is in a lot of decks right now. Very good card. That's just a card that you probably already have in your deck that you can utilize for the Minior to take one hit knockouts. And again, just a single energy card speeds that boy right back up there. So with Snorlax decks not really attacking, this is a good one, I feel like.
I fully agree. I think this is a great card for the matchup. It's great because like you have Manaphy if you're worried about spread decks, Jirachi if you're worried about mostly Sableye. and then now for the stall deck, there's a card that just exists from Paldea Evolved that is just Minior. It's just one card. I'm assuming you play energy. I think the only decks where this could get dicey is if for whatever reason you're in a deck that only plays like 4 energy or 5 energy. Yeah, you might be in trouble. But look, you know, just play to your outs, or maybe just take the L. If you just have a deck that like you know is going to lose no matter what you do, that's something that we've learned time and time again from other professional Pokemon players, which is sometimes you just got to know when to take an L and not take out something in your deck. But for a lot of other decks, I think this is a good tech. The other tech that we wanted to talk about is...
This is the secret one. Yeah, this is one... This is one that nobody is talking about right now, except a Reddit user. Do you know the name of the Reddit user?
No. I mean, I don't have it pulled up.
Apologize for stealing this from you on Reddit, but if you know, you know.
Someone mentioned this Sandshrew from 151, and it has an ability that is called Sandscreen. Train your cards in your opponent's discard pile can't be put into their deck by an effect of your opponent's item or supporter card. So that's a long way of saying you can't get back your supporters with Palpad or Team Yelcheer. You can't get back trainer cards like Palpad or whatever with Silene. And this Sandshrew doesn't even need to be in the active. It can just sit on the bench. Doesn't matter. So if you're going down the route of, I don't want to have to attach energy and actually take prizes, instead I want to deck my opponent out first, this might be a sneaky little card that you just sort of hold it in your hand. You don't really play it until like it's like later in the game.
Or and, you know, unless they play Erica's Invitation and then they look at it and they're like, oh God.
Oh no, what have I done? But the thing is, like, they're not going to knock out your Pokemon. None of these lists attack for any damage. So... Mm-hmm. Sandshrew is totally fine. And I think the only thing about this card versus the other one, the Minior, it is more proactive in that you are taking prizes. You're not going to necessarily go to time. Sandshrew is a card that very much invites the game to go to time. And then you have to rely on them decking out before you deck out, which is still a thing you have to consider, right? Like, mm-hmm. Even if they can't shuffle things back into their deck, if they know early on that they have to contend with this, they might play more aggressively. They might throw Crabominable in the active and start milling you to get you out before they do. So It's the only thing that I would say about this card is you gotta play it sneaky.
The thing is about this card, though, is that if they're attacking with Crabominable, you can retreat. So
That's
you can
true.
start getting a heavy hitter in the active. So I think this is really, really cool. If you were to ask me, is Mini-Aur better or is Sandshrew better? I think probably Mini-Aur is better. But if you are looking through your bulk, or maybe you just really, really don't want to lose the control, and maybe you've got a spot open, because in my opinion, I think you could actually probably take away Jirachi right now in the
Yeah.
format. I think you could get away with taking Jirachi away, unless you're like a smaller deck. If you have a bunch of small Pokemon, maybe not. But if you're looking for some tech cards, I think these two fighting Pokemon are it. I think these are the two cards that you try to include in your list. Have some fun. And man, that Sandshrew. I don't think that Sandshrew has like an illustration art though. Unfortunately.
I don't
It would
believe
be
so,
super
no.
cheap if it did. It
But
would be
yeah,
super
like,
cheap.
I think that the Snorlax stall decks, I think they'll expect Mini-Aur. I have no idea how they would deal with it, but like, I don't know, there might be a way to deal with it that they can
I
tech
don't know
in,
how they
but
would
like
deal. I don't know how they would deal with Sandshrew, really. Because especially like
yeah.
if you leave Sandshrew out until late in the game, right, where they've expended a ton of resources and they're
Yeah.
almost into their loop portion of the game. You know, they're at like 10 cards left probably, and you probably have like 20 some. So
Yeah.
like, I feel like if you're able to save the Sandshrew for late in the game, you're in a really good spot.
Yeah.
Like just as they're about to set their loop, you just slap that guy down, and then, oh no, I don't have any cards to really recover. The only thing you have to worry about then is like Pidgeot, I think.
Yeah, I think
Pidgeot's the
that's a
only
good
way that
point.
you got to deal with.
The Pidgeot is still annoying because if they have bench space and they can throw Pidgeot down and shuffle it, then you will still lose because that Pidgeot will just do its thing. So, yeah, Mini-Aur, I would agree. Probably the way to go.
And that's
Jake.
it.
Yeah, that's it.
Mini-Aur and Sandshrew, the lowest rarity, less than 10 cents each. Less than 10
Yeah.
cents combined, actually. Market price is 9 cents total for those two cards. So
Yeah.
check your couches, check your laundry dryers, maybe grandparents, you know.
Check the bulk piles at your local TCG store.
Yeah. Get some steals. Well, don't steal, but get some great deals.
Yep, exactly. Jake, sign us
And
out.
that's how you could beat control. And we'll give you the lowdown on everything else that happens in the Pokemon trading card game for the podcast that revolves around the evolving meta. Thanks for listening to the Metapod. I'm Jake. That's Sean. We'll see you next week. What? Oh, man, I hope more news comes out.
Same thing.